This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And you're listening to Her Vantage, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Deborah Henry, who is a former model and beauty pageant title holder, who was crowned Miss Universe Malaysia 2011 and Miss Malaysia World 2007. She also placed in the top 16 at Miss World 2007. Now, Deborah left her modeling career to champion the lives of refugee children in Malaysia. She co-founded Fuji School, a non-profit charity organization that provides basic education to Somalian refugee children, and then Fujila, a social enterprise. Deborah is also a World Vision's Child's Rights Advocate and Ambassador for Yes I Can campaign, an educational awareness and advocacy campaign for the prevention of unplanned and unwanted pregnancy in Malaysia. I took that from Wikipedia, Deborah, and I'm sure there are a lot of changes and developments up there because your accolades are a lot longer, but if I went on, there won't be time for an interview. Now, for people who don't know you, you have to go down a memory lane. I don't know anybody who don't know you, but how you ventured into modeling and winning Miss Universe Malaysia 2011?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It's great to be on the show. How did I win Miss Universe Malaysia 2011?
Or just your journey, you know?
My journey. Well, yeah. You know what? It's something I have to say. I use the word, I was a reluctant sort of model and beauty queen, in that I was growing up in school. I was very sporty, athletic. I lived in shorts and t-shirts. I was not one of those girls who grew up thinking, oh, I'd love to be in a beauty pageant. And, you know, when I'm old and watch the girls on stage and be in awe, that wasn't my thing. I remember when I was like, I think I was 14 and I was in Bangsa one night with some friends and a modeling agency came up to me and the lady was like, would you like to be a model? And I was like, not really. And so I kind of like stumbled into it. I did my first few shows when I was 15, 16 And obviously at that age, you're like, this is kind of fun. Right. And you get to earn some money and you're on stage and you meet different people. So I grew into the role. Okay. I was very anti-beauty pageant, to be honest. Okay. I had a lot of friends, beauty queen friends who are much older than me who were saying, Deborah, you have to join, you have to join. And I was like, you know, oh, I'm definitely not joining this. I'm parade myself on stage. And then obviously I went off to model in London for a year when I was 17. And then obviously promised my parents that like I was going to get my degree. So moved to Australia to get my degree, my undergrad degree, and then eventually came back to Malaysia in 2007. And that's when a friend of mine said, I think you should join, you know, Miss World Malaysia is happening in a couple of months. I think you should join. You could win. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, really? But I did it anyway. And obviously it's offered me a huge platform and stepping stone to so many different things. Right. So I always say with the pageant, yes, I've made it when you win. It's really the beginning. And I always tell the girls, like, especially now when I just recently judged Miss Universe Malaysia 2020 a couple of days ago. And, you know, I always tell the girls, it's really a blank canvas. What you choose to paint on it is what your reality will be.
Right. The reality of what will be moving forward, right? And yes,
moving forward for each girl, right?
Right.
You can't go, I want to be a beauty queen. What does that mean in 2020? How relevant are you as a woman, as a role model, as someone who's going to inspire younger women or anyone around you? What does this title really mean? It has to be more than just a pretty face or a good looking girl.
Right. So. It's great because the Sarakin won, so I'm very happy. Yours is such a cute story, right? Is it typical? I saw you in a shopping mall kind of thing. Now, okay, so obviously after that, what got you into humanitarian works?
So I was actually, I think I was just, you know, sometimes you're just born with this thing inside of you. I think that was just me. I felt very strongly about things like injustice and poverty and people who suffered when the world has so much. And I remember sitting with my grandfather, we grew up with them, and asking him, like, when I think 14, 15, I'd sit with him in the afternoons and be like, yeah, but why did this happen? And why did that happen? And perhaps quite innocently, but it was something that just, it sat with me. It was within me. And I even when I started modeling before that, I was always looking at how can I do sort of a fundraiser? How can I use my position of privilege? Because I recognized very early on that I'm one of the lucky ones. Millions of people around the world suffer. They don't have food. They don't have homes. They don't have the most basic needs. And so for me, it was, how do I use my position of privilege to to bring change to my world. And that doesn't have to be the whole world, but just my world, my right. bubble that I right. live in. So it was something that before, as I started modeling, when I went to university, I actually decided to study political science and economics. So that really solidified some of my views on matters. It solidified that this was something I wanted to commit to. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And then when I came back from Australia, I had done a lot of volunteering in different NGOs. I did the Miss World thing, where I ended up working very closely with World Vision. Mm-hmm. I traveled the world with them, visiting many of their different projects.
Right.
That really opened my eyes to the suffering and plight of different communities around the world. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and okay. then eventually I started Fuji a couple of years later in 2009.
Right. So, and it's been 11 years, right, with Fuji School.
Yeah.
What have been some of the setbacks? Why the refugees?
I guess why not, right? I mean, they still are people.
Right.
And for me, I know a question I get asked a lot in Malaysia is, oh, what about Malaysians first? And then I would go, well, where do you draw the line? Like, is it Chinese first? Is it Malays first? Is it Christians first? Is it boys first? Is it girl? Like, you know, where do you stop? I like to look at things as people, you know, humanity, period. Mm. People in need. And if I can do something to help a fellow brother or sister, I'm going to do it.
Mm.
But also because I think a lot of Malaysians still don't quite grasp the reality of what it means to be a refugee.
Mm.
I think we get very confused with a lot of the language that gets used out there. Illegal immigrants is a very common phrase that we use to basically paint everyone with the same brush of they are foreigners, they're not allowed to be here legally, and therefore they're bad, and therefore get rid of them.
Right.
And that is not the reality for refugees. Their circumstances are very different. They've had to run away from their homelands. They don't want to leave their countries. But
right.
when bombs are dropping on your house and someone's trying to kill you,
right.
most of us are going to run. So I think it's about putting ourselves in someone else's shoes. And for me, they are here and they just want peace to build a life. And they're not looking for charity and constant handouts.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking to live off our country for free. Mm-hmm. They want to contribute. They want to be safe. And if that would be the right human thing to do, I think, to be able to help. And we forget sometimes that there's no social net for them. Like if they fall into any trouble, there's nothing there for them.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
medical, health, education, nothing. So, I think it's really education, healthcare, and the ability to work. If people can work, they can earn money, they can take care of themselves. And so that's something that we really are trying to champion more and more now, that we don't want handouts, we want a hand up.
Right.
So if people can earn their own income, they can take care of their families, they can pay their bills, they contribute to the economy, and that helps all of us.
Right. So it's been, like I said, it's a non-profit charity organization. How many kids would have gone through Fuji School?
Right now, to date, in the past 10 years, about over 500 children have gone through our doors, from the ages of 4 till over 20 years old, from over 8 countries.
Right.
And we currently have about 200 students at the school.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a wait list. We have a huge wait list as well. So it's the struggle of expanding. It's the struggle of being able to provide more for the work with the community to provide more. But, you know, we run, we're 100% nonprofit. We rely on corporate donations, private donations in order to pay everything. So it's a tough time right now.
Right. It's always never been
for
easy.
Everyone.
Yeah. And it's even tougher now. We'll talk a little bit about Fujila, the social enterprise, in just a moment. I'm here with Deborah Henry. You're listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Birkins for Mama. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
This is Enterprise, Good Morning, and also Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Deborah Henry, talking about her school, which is 11 years old, Or 11 years old now, or is that, did I get that right? And of course, you started Fujila as well. Now tell me about Fujila and its objectives, why you started that.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about Fujila. We started, obviously, the nonprofit Fuji, like you say, 10, 11 years ago. And it was a very simple premise of all children have the right to education.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to play a role in providing the service to community in this country. And our doors are open to any child who cannot access government schools in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But we also recognize the crazy challenges involved with raising funds over 10 years and having to constantly ask for money from various different people, right, and companies. And so a couple of years ago, it was something that was always on my mind. I wanted to be able to do something that took matters into our own hands and allow us to sustainably raise funds or to sustainably support the running of Fuji School, right, financially. Right. So we started Fujila, which is the sort of the business arm of Fuji, and it's a social enterprise, and we focus on creating fashion and lifestyle accessories, which obviously we resell, and a percentage of the profits will go back to Fuji School.
Right.
So very impact-driven. We also have hired, we work very closely with the community, so we have about 5 refugee youth, girls, who work with us, and so we teach them how to make the jewelry, the earrings. They learn a lot of hands-on business skills, so entrepreneurial skills, from sales, marketing, to inventory management, to basic admin finance. So it's really a learning on the job.
Right.
And teaching them how you can start and build your own business.
Right.
So it's very exciting, and and we're about 3 years old now.
Okay.
Gaining a little bit of traction. We like to do some fun collaborations and projects, and at the essence, I think we try and encourage all of our consumers to, you know, the tagline we use is "It's time to wear your change." So it's people who want to change the world. It's little things you can do every day that basically, you know, little things you do every day that get you, that like help you change the world. Your world that you live in.
Right.
And I would say to people, you know, you're spending money every day. If your dollars can count for something more, why not?
Mm. So tell me about some of the collaborations you've done.
Yeah, so one of the most recent ones that was super excited about was our collaboration with Kun Hui, who's one of our top Malaysian designers. I've known him since I was like 16. He's a very dear friend, and we came out of this this MCO period, and he's like called me and he's like, "Deborah, I want to do something. You know, we've got to think differently." And the fashion, I think one of the biggest hit industries was the fashion industry.
Oh.
And so he said, "I have so many rolls of excess fabric sitting in my warehouse, my workshop, and I've not used them for years. And what can we do?" So the Fujila team got together. We came up with some concepts and designs of what we could make.
Right.
We within like a month, 5 weeks, we got stuff together. We did a shoot. We made the products, and we ended up selling these really cute twillies, little scarves, as well as a range of handbags, all using excess fabric. So the tagline for that campaign was "Left over, not left out." So essentially using leftover fabrics to ensure that children are not left out of an education. So the impact is double to you know, a bit environmental, but also to educate kids. And that was really successful. We sold out pretty much as soon as we launched.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. See, I've got to get one, and then it's all sold out.
yeah, it's fully sold out. It's like, you know, I had some friends who are like, "What?" And I say, "Sorry, it's gone."
It's a good problem.
I didn't get one.
It's a good problem.
Yeah.
You know, so. And it's interesting, right? These sort of collaborations, like how would you like to work with corporations? Like, do you think that, you know, they could come in like as corporate gifts, that sort of thing as well?
Exactly. I think more and more people want to be able to be a little bit more conscious and responsible in their purchases. And also, you know, we don't want to just give things for the sake of giving things. It just creates more waste. So if you can give something with a little bit of heart, something that someone can appreciate and perhaps is a little bit more functional, I think that matters. So definitely for corporations, we are looking into corporate gifting, you know, making bespoke items that the company would want and would enjoy giving out to their clients or to their employees. And we are looking to partner with more companies across different sectors, and to see, and it's also about synergy, right? What they do, what their values are, what they do, what ours are, and being able to create products that really have an impact. So even in terms of CSR, I talk about the traditional CSR is always, "Oh, okay, here's our CSR arm. We want to give a little bit of money, okay, and you put it there and you just educate some kids and you pay for something and you're done. And you like have a little pizza party and then you're like, "Well, I feel great about life," and then you go home, right? And so we're trying to really get companies to think a bit differently, invest in ideas, invest in projects, invest in long-term sustainable solutions.
Right.
And so for us, it's even now we're saying to companies like, invest in Fujila. Like when you invest in us, you build us as a brand to be able to sustainably support over 200 kids at our school. And eventually in 1 or 2 years' time, if we're able to cover 50% of the running cost of Fuji School. Isn't that amazing?
Right.
So your money, the value of your investment. Just
and the lives it impacts.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's getting companies to think a little bit differently about how they give. Because very often they're like, ooh, so if I give to your business, then how is that helping? Mm. And I'm like, well, you may not see the benefits today, but you will in time.
Right.
So things like that, we're trying to get people to think, change mindsets about giving and charity.
Right. And it's very interesting because it's sustainable fashion because it's Kunhui's extra fabric. Right? I'm just thinking about that. Now, you've worn many hats, model, beauty pageant, title holder, humanitarian works, and of course, running a business, right? What have you learned about yourself as an entrepreneur?
That, you know, you will feel fear, you will feel inadequate, you will feel like you're not good enough, the imposter syndrome, as Michelle Obama talks about. So I also recognize my passion and my energy for things that I love, things that make you get out of bed in the morning, and that you're constantly always learning in life. You know, you don't know it all. Surround yourself with people that bring and build a team that support your vision, but also know what you don't know. Don't be afraid of saying you don't know it all and to learn from other people. And you got to have grit. I think a lot of times you start something and after 2-3 months or years, it's like, oh, I'm exhausted. So really having to dig deep and where is that grit?
Right.
You know, why do you really want something?
Okay.
And I think for everyone, it's very different. People are driven by very different factors.
Mm.
For me, it's a lot more than just money. It's a lot of other factors as well that drive me and what I do. But even in talking about the imposter syndrome, we were actually launching a collection of T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
We're collaborating with this young Malaysian artist. She's really cool.
Yeah.
And we're doing a collection of T-shirts and a tote bag around the imposter syndrome. So that's launching hopefully at the end of this month.
So
we like to do things like that and get people to stop, to think, to question.
Okay. So how did the MCO affect you, the school, and the business? Well, the business we know roughly, but, you know, and the school. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. how did it not affect us? That's more of a question. It really did. It really did. It's affected me in my personal work. It's affected me. I mean, everyone mentally, mental, emotional. It's just something that no one's ever experienced, you know? Just trying to like wake up every day and be positive it's really taught me to recognize so many of the blessings that I have that I, especially during the heart of the MCO, Fuji actually, we did a fundraising campaign. We actually were able to raise a significant amount of funds. We ended up doing a lot of food relief runs, and not just for the refugee community, but for a lot of migrant workers who are sort of stuck in their various construction sites.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them actually had been pretty much abandoned by their employers and had no food.
Mm.
So we were actually delivering lots of food to them, and also B40 communities, a lot of them as well.
Right.
They live on more day-to-day income and they were pretty much left with nothing. And so it was really good for me because to be on the ground and actually meet a lot of these individuals whom in any other time I would never have encountered and to hear their stories. And that you realize the suffering and the need is far reaching. And it's not even about basic, very basic things. So it really does. Yeah. These things open your eyes.
Mm.
It makes you recognize the realities around you and also just from a personal level, to be grateful, to recognize what you have, to change your mind about how you choose to live your life.
Right.
Especially for me, because it's weird because I also work in an industry that is very excessive and opulent and, very superficial in a way, right?
Mm.
And always trying to, for me, it's always that balance between that side of work that I do and then this other side of me.
Right. It's about balance. And of course, like with the school, the kids couldn't come to school.
Yeah. So obviously, like all schools, school was off. So imagine, trying to like mobilize our Zoom, Google Hangout learning. It was quite the challenge, but I'm very impressed. I think the family stepped up, the children stepped up, the teachers stepped up. I mean, we're talking about very small homes here, which have some have 3-4 kids. They have only one phone. It's not even the latest technology that, when you're imagining the kids are trying to use that to learn and share the one gadget in the house. So there were challenges for sure, This is where everyone recognizes we're in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, everyone's facing different challenges, but when you see humanity recognize that, it's this pretty much sucks for everyone. So we all need to step up and try to play our roles a bit better.
Right. And I guess, you know, you mentioned a little bit about the T-shirts that you're coming out with. What else can we look forward to for Fuji School and Fujila?
So for Fujila, we've got, like the collaboration with the T-shirts. Mm-hmm. Coming closer to Christmas, some of our newer jewellery collections will be out. Mm. Potentially another collaboration with Kunhui towards the end of this year. Mm. We shall see.
And
just exciting, potential exciting collaborations lined up for the next 6 months and expanding. We're just trying to grow more and be able to create more impact. And with Fuji, we just launched one of our new fundraising campaign where, you know, coming out of the pandemic, we realized that it's our shared humanity and it's individuals being able to support in small ways. So our new campaign is actually on our website, fuji.org, where people can, basically be like a monthly donor. For like 50 ringgit, as little as 50 ringgit a month.
Right.
And that goes a long way to educate, and it all goes towards the education of the children at the school. Right. So,
Okay. Well, all the best with the work that you're doing for Fuji and Fujila. I've been speaking to Deborah Henry. You've been listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.